What's up, everybody? Welcome into Hockey Mountain High, your go-to Avalanche podcast presented by Superbook Sports. JJ Jerez here, Arif Dean, both of Mile High Sports, and then DNVR's Megan Angley joins the podcast. Megan, how are you doing? How's your off-season so far? Thanks so much for hanging out with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. You know, it's the part of the off-season where it's dragging on a bit, and I'm starting to miss hockey. It's definitely been good, but I'm definitely missing being in a cold ice arena more and more.
Yep, it's definitely that time of the year. It's both, like you said, dragging and kind of flying by. We're coming up on 3 months since the end of the Avalanche's season here, probably in about a week from now. We'll be 3 months since Game 7. Last year, 3 months from their last game, was already training camp. Like, it's crazy how different this season has been. And, you know, I think I say this to every single guest. I'm enjoying the longer break, but I'm also excited for it to get started again.
Right on. Well, as the summer press box tour of 2023 continues, Megan, we haven't discussed the Ross Colton deal. We haven't recorded since last Sunday. And of course, the deal was done on Monday. So we were just a day too early there. So I wanted to get in with both of you guys a little bit. Just the Ross Colton deal, of course, signs 4 years, $4 million each year. I don't know. It seems like a pretty good deal for both sides here.
Yeah, you can go ahead and get started, Megan.
All right. You know, it's an appropriate time to talk about it after a little bit of time has passed, too, with dust settling now. I think people are feeling more comfortable with the overall value of the contract. I think getting term actually makes this of greater value to the Avs in a cap era where we're anticipating it going up in the near future. I think this is a pretty solid deal for Ross Colton and for the Avalanche. It's something that I think they were anticipating, too, when they targeted this player in the first place. This is likely what they were aware the situation would be with Tampa if they wanted to keep him. And in looking at other offseason moves and other teams, what they've done to resolve the issues at 2 and 3C actually feels very cost-effective in what they've done with Johansson and Colton together. And a little bit of this offseason feels like they're banking on the upside of a couple players like who have had good seasons, like with Johansson in his recent 2021 season, and Ross Colton has had 20 goal seasons. It feels like they're banking on these players achieving that and exceeding that. And I think it's a fair thing to expect from Ross Colton at, I believe, 27 years old to sort of step into a JT Compher-esque role and also satisfy some of the things that they are missing in Gabriel Landeskog, a player now who has great net front presence in Ross Colton. These are the kinds of things I think they were looking to invest a little bit in as well. And because there's some runway now for his time in Colorado, it's a contract that I think we're going to feel a lot better in year two than we might in year one, because there's going to be some adjustment that happens. And once he gets integrated to the buy-in that's expected in Colorado, and he's coming from a place that is a championship caliber team as well, so I think he has a lot of this in his DNA already. But once he has a year to integrate with the cultural demands of Colorado, I think we're going to find that he fits in so well here. We're going to be looking at that fourth year fondly.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's several thoughts that I had about the deal when it broke. You know, we've kind of touched on this a little bit every week since the trade broke back in late June. But ultimately, like you said, like, you can't really judge the deal as a whole, the contract, all of that, until obviously the contract, the term, the number is signed, because it gives you a little bit of a look into what the Avalanche feel about this player. And the first thought in my mind is, last week, this was actually something JJ and I discussed, and I made the prediction that it's either going to be a 1 year deal for a little bit of money, or it's going to be four plus. And I didn't see two or three as an option for this exact reason. I thought either the Avalanche are going to be like, you know what, screw it. We cannot give this guy the kind of money that he wants. Let's give him 1 year. He's a stopgap. We'll kind of reassess next summer when there's a ton of UFAs and more cap. Or we're going to invest that second round draft pick that we traded, part of the new hook trade, into this player. We're going to give him a little bit more term and a little bit more dollars. But it's because we trust that this player is going to get better with the deal, and it's ultimately going to end up being a good deal. The prediction I had was 4 times 375. I looked at the deal that JT just came off of. I looked at the type of player Colton is. You know, he's already had a 20 goal season, a cup winning goal. He's played in a couple Stanley Cup finals. You know, he's been through it already. And I looked at that and I said, he's going to get a little bit more than JT just got, especially because you're buying three UFA years. So, you know, is it an overpayment? I mean, and if I think he was worth 4x375, then yes, in my brain, it's an overpayment. Is it a massive overpayment or worth talking about? Not really. It's $250,000 in the season where you can do something like this because you have Landeskog's LTIR cap space to play with. So that's obviously something that the Avs have. It's the perfect year to be able to have that $7 million. And if or when Landeskog's healthy again, the cap starts to shoot up, you're fine. So that was the first thought I had. The second thought I had about him is I feel like giving him 4 years at $4 million, you know, there were those murmurs back on July 1st that the Avalanche were going to give a last ditch effort to try to sign JT. And this was even after they brought in Colton. I really wonder what they gave JT as an offer now. I'm so curious about that, because if they were willing to give Colton four and JT just had a 50-point season, obviously he ended up signing for 5.1. Were they giving JT like 4 years at $4.5 million? Was it closer than we thought? Like, I'm so curious where that number was with JT, because in my brain, there was no way that the Avalanche's third line center was going to make anything more than $2.5 million. But that's when I thought they were going to have a second line center that was making more than what Johansson's making. So I'm just so extremely curious where JT would have landed on that. And then the third thought for me is exactly what you said. I think by the time we get to the end of the deal, it's going to end up being a lot stronger of a contract than we, you know, look at it to be already. And not that he's going to turn into a, you know, a stable or a consistent top six guy, but it does give me those vibes that we got. I wrote about this the other day when the Avalanche traded for Lehkonen, when the Avalanche traded for traded for Devontae, signed Val Nichushkin, and traded for Andrei Burakovsky. Those players where they see something in them, but they weren't given the opportunity to grow. It makes me wonder if there is like an off chance that by year two, even of this deal, he's the one playing 2C and Johansson's playing 3C. I just wonder what they see. Is he that JT Compher replacement that's a middle six center that can play on the second line in a pinch, but ideally not full time? Or is he a guy that you can see like Lehkonen and Berkey and all them that just kind of needs an opportunity to prove, hey, this is a consistent second liner?
Yeah, that's where I was going to go with it, because I like the way Megan kind of phrased it, almost like there was a slight emphasis on slight overpayment for him, that so that leads kind of high expectations. They kind of did the same thing with Miles Wood on the term, right? There's a long term, so I think that raises expectations, but they're not going to do that unless they feel like these guys are going to thrive and grow their game, get under the Jared Bednar system, and suddenly they're going to blossom into a better player than they've ever been. So I think, you know, we know that for Miles Wood, that he was on their radar for a long time. You can only assume that they've done the thorough homework on a guy like Ross Colton, and they're willing to give him this kind of dollar, because in the future, we are going to be sitting here looking back on this podcast and say, remember how we said that this was going to be a really great deal? So I think I have the utmost confidence in their, I guess, due diligence on the process and their confidence in themselves to be able to make a deal happen like that.
If there's one thing I want to say about the Avalanche, it's as much as we will sit here every single week, and Megan, I'm not sure if you agree with this, but I'm sure you see it too, and kind of not necessarily bash, but question the Avalanche's ability to develop prospects and to have those guys on ELC's play, as much as we're willing to do that, I am willing to do the opposite with their pro scouting staff and say that they are very good at identifying talent that needs an opportunity. They've done it way more times than we can count, starting from, you know, Ryan Graves. There's probably guys before that I can't think of. Devontae's coming in here. I remember we did a podcast with Ryan Clark right before he moved to Seattle, and we talked about the expansion draft coming up in 12 months from that time. And we asked him who the Avalanche might give up in the expansion draft, and his prediction was Devontae's. They traded for him to have him for a year to probably lose him, but that way you can keep Ryan Graves and everybody else. Like, how much has changed since then in terms of how we look at Devontae's and how we view that player? So their pro scouting staff deserves a ton of credit. And that's why, like you said, like, it's hard to really judge this deal, because you know there's a lot of due diligence. It was the same thing with Miles Wood. He came onto Zoom the other day when we chatted with him and said, Chris McFarland told me that he's been scouting me for years, or, you know, has wanted me for years.
I think it's an excellent point too, because we more or less see the Avs lose Newhook to make Ross Colton happen. And so in addition to this contract, there is value lost in a young player who still conceivably has upside. It's just not going to be realized as immediately as the Avs need it to be in Newhook right now. And that adds to then what they see in Ross Colton and why they're so keenly interested in him. And I think this is captured perfectly in recent times in such a good fit they found in Lekkonen, like you guys have mentioned, but even for the short term and at the point in the offseason that they found Evan Rodriguez, to see Evan Rodriguez get Ross Colton money, kind of, in Florida begs the question, because we watched Evan Rodriguez presumably came to Colorado to play a third line role, but absolutely exceeded that, had a pretty excellent year on the whole. I know there were points in the season where he became less visible and people were critical, but he ultimately played well above a third line role, oftentimes in the top six, becoming a mainstay there, and he got paid at the end of the day. I think they see kind of a flex between both Evan Rodriguez and JT Compher being versatile in Ross Colton, and I think they want to invest in that.
Yeah, I mean, it was the depth that was kind of their downfall against the Seattle Kraken, and, you know, that's ultimately why the Avalanche's playoff run is almost 3 months since the last game, is because of that. So I think they did a great job there. There was a tweet that Evan Rowell put out that I thought was really fascinating. JT Compher 5.1, Alex Newhook 2.9, total of $8 million, the exact same dollar amount as Ross Colton and Ryan Johansson. So the Avalanche could have signed, you know, probably for a little bit less, given you usually overpay for UFA a little bit in JT for the Red Wings, but they could have signed JT and Newhook for the same amount of money on the 2C and 3C that they got Johansson and Colton. But number one, they felt the need to shake it up. They felt that there was a better fit. You know, Newhook has the potential to rise, but he, to them, didn't fit what they need him to be right now. And JT is what he is. And they feel with both Johansson, there is potential growth, and Ryan Johansson, well, for Johansson, there's potential rebounding, and for Ross Colton, there's potential growth. And somehow they went from JT and Newhook to Colton and Johansson, and in the process got a first round draft pick out of that switch, which is just the most fascinating part. It wasn't an even trade. They ended up with more in terms of a high prospect. So I think that's fascinating. And it just kind of goes to show, like you said, how much they see in this player and how much they're investing in him because of the type of guy that they think he can be.
Yeah, I guess let's shift to the most recent news. Since you're bringing up Evan Rowell already, I saw it first from Evan Rowell. I know he's been on top of it for a while. Nikolai Kovalenko, it sounds like he's taking a step closer to joining the Avalanche. Of course, he's going to sign with the Avalanche, but stay back in Russia and play another season before he does make that next step. But I guess thoughts on that? We were just kind of bashing the prospect pool. Here's maybe somebody coming up through that prospect pool. And Megan, I know prospects are kind of your thing. What do you think about somebody like this? And then let's dive a little bit more into just the rest of the prospect pool for the Avalanche right now.
Kovalenko is certainly a bright spot in the prospect conversation. And we recently did our prospect pyramid, and Kovalenko is in a tier of his own at the very top of it because of how pro-ready we believe he is. And I haven't gotten to watch as much of his game as Evan has, but I think being in a league among men and being as productive as he has been, it's a pretty consistent body of work to now that he has under his belt at just 23. The pro readiness is evident there. And then just one more year then gets him primed, I think, to make the immediate leap to the National League. And I think that's the only way that it's going to be possible. I've already penciled him in coming over in the spring of this year when his season finishes, because he wouldn't be coming unless he was ready to make that leap to the National League level. There's probably going to be some adjustment that happens to North American ice, and I'm happy to see that happen sooner rather than later because he is so young. It's the perfect time for him to make that transition, and I feel the Avs could actually use his skill set. He does have some versatility on wing that, with this kind of forward position unfilled on that third line, there are people that you could maybe pencil in there, like a Logan O'Connor, but I still, in my eyes, view a forward spot is up for grabs on the Avs lineup as currently constructed. Now, I think they're going to still come up with some kind of a solution for the start of the season, but I do believe Kovalenko has been a part of their future plans because they are keeping a close eye on him. And I'm really excited because this will be a greater reflection of how maybe some of the scouting from the draft side of things has come for the Avs, because he hasn't necessarily been developing like here in Loveland, but this is a player that they sought out purposefully, and we'll be able to see now that fit in Colorado and hope that this is a win for the prospects and their development.
Russians don't come over to play in the AHL, right? They're not going to come over.
There's no reason to.
Yeah.
For the most part, there's no reason to. If you have a good opportunity in Russia and you're going to get paid to play there, I don't see a reason why you should come to the AHL, to be honest with you, especially because of the comfort that you have in the KHL. So it is a unique situation for prospects like that. And it's always nice to see guys like this kind of slip through the cracks and end up late round picks. Not that he's the same type of player, but kind of similar to Kirill Kaprizov. The Minnesota Wild drafted him and waited nearly, I think, a half decade or a little bit more than a half decade even. And then suddenly here's this kid coming out of nowhere that 31 other teams were like, oh crap, where did this guy come from? And that's kind of going to be the similar idea that you get with Kovalenko. Not that he's going to be, there's a lot of hype around him. Not that he's going to be a 90-point guy by any means, but
that's the thing. There's always hype around the young Russians that come into the Avalanche, right? I mean, I could think back to what Mironov. I mean, I know Kamenev. Yeah. Kamenev was a trade, but Kamenev was a bust. So, I mean, I don't know what I hope he pans out, but I always have this slight seed of doubt when it comes to any Russian prospects.
Just given the numbers that Kovalenko has in Russia, there's something a little bit different about him this time around. I think the Avalanche turned the corner with this one. But even if he is that middle six flex forward that's going to play on your third line, like, I don't know, with Colton and Wood, if that's what ends up happening, and can be that insurance marker for Jonathan Drouin's not playing too well, Lekkonen or Nichushkin or Rantanen are injured or whatever it may be, those are valuable pieces. Like, we just spent the first 15 minutes of this podcast talking about how the Avalanche lost because of their depth, and they went and invested in a couple guys in Wood and Colton. We saw the Tampa Bay Lightning have one of the best seasons in NHL history and then get swept. And then what put them over the hump was that third line with Gordon, Coleman, and Goudreau to three straight Stanley Cup finals. Obviously, they didn't have them for the last year, but we've seen this time and time again that these types of depth players, those flex third line guys, are the guys that are going to help you get over the hump. And that's the kind of player that Kovalenko is probably going to be. So I think it's really great to see that the Avalanche finally have something here. I saw the Athletic just did a top 50 prospects, and they didn't have Kovalenko in there. And I think that that's completely fine. I know a lot of people were questioning that. A lot of people were tweeting me about that. I think that's completely fine. Not that I'm bashing Scott Wheeler's work by any means, but again, there are these types of Russian players that are in their low 20s, you know, 22, 23, whatever Kovalenko's exact age is at this point, that they kind of slip through the cracks. And this is the type of guy that I think you should be excited for. Temper the expectations. He's not the next Mikko Rantanen, but he is, you know, looking like he's going to be a valuable NHL player. And that's all you need if you're the Avalanche. You need valuable NHL players where you don't have to, no disrespect, end up with Matt Nieto in your top six in the playoffs. And that's the type of thing that Kovalenko is going to give you. So I think it's great to see that he's going to come over. I think it's great to see that he's looking to sign. And Megan, correct me if I'm wrong, I think the KHL season ends around like February, March-ish time?
That's what I'm imagining too.
Okay. Yeah, so then in that case, I don't know what exactly when the trade deadline is, but he'll be in around then. If he signs a contract now, because I know a lot of people were tweeting me, he's on the Avalanche's reserve list. He can come over any time. It does not have to be before the trade deadline. It would be similar to... Well, not similar to, but, you know, it would be kind of similar to what Cale Makar did in terms of being able to make his debut in the playoffs, because there are certain rules around college free agents that are your prospects. There are certain rules about having a player signed in on your reserve list before the trade deadline. And that's what the Avalanche are looking to do here soon with Kovalenko.
Yeah, I guess, Megan, you've done the homework on him, right? I guess what makes you think that he's going to jump right in and be a good fit on this lineup? Because again, I still have that seed of doubt until I've never seen him play hockey. So I don't really know this way or that way, but of course you guys have done the research. So I guess, what are your thoughts?
I think it's following his trajectory of growth. Like, he comes off a 54 point season, and it's a matter of circumstance in some ways as well, because he is 23. Physically, he's matured. And so this isn't like an 18-year-old fresh out of juniors that we're looking to build this kind of expectation around. This is someone who now has, I'm just looking at his elite prospects, several seasons of pro hockey in a men's league under his belt. And that's what I'm chalking it up to. And then I alluded to the versatility on wing, but being utilized in different ways than throughout his time in the KHL and the MHL has allowed him to develop a part of his game that is going to be demanded of him in a more depth role. But being able to find the offense is something that the Avs have needed from their depth. And it was almost a struggle at times for the entirety of the Avs, excluding Mikko Rantanen and Nathan MacKinnon, to score at one point. I just felt like the production was down on a whole. And seeing a player being able to find the back of the net at a pro level in a men's league among men gives me a little bit hope that he's more pro-ready than some other prospects we've looked at. The other context is this is a sixth-round pick that we are talking about being NHL ready straight from the KHL. I still think this is such an accomplishment, even if he finds himself in more of a 13th man place with the Avs to start and to start making that adjustment to North American ice. It's still such an exciting thing. And at 23, the sky's the limit too. There's still a lot of runway left for him to realize a lot of that potential as well.
Yeah, and something I want to throw out there that's kind of unrelated to his potential. I often forget that not every hockey fan has the same starting point. So for those that don't know, Nikolai Kovalenko's father, Andrei Kovalenko, played for the Avalanche for, I believe, 20 something games. I have it pulled up here. 26 games, 11 goals, 11 assists in the 1995-96 season before being one of the three pieces that brought Patrick Waugh and Mike Keane to the Colorado Avalanche. So I think there is just a great connection there to the former Avalanche that Kovalenko in 1995, Andrei Kovalenko was one of the pieces and like the bigger piece, the young piece, obviously with Martin Rutschinski, but the young prospect piece that brought in Patrick Waugh to help the Avalanche win a Stanley Cup. And now the Avalanche here in 2023-24 want to do the same thing with his kid being a big part of it, obviously in the sense of jumping into the lineup, not as a trade piece. So I love the connection there as well with him.
Fun fact from Tariff. I love it. 2 points. Award a tariff. I guess I know DNVR and BSN, I mean, they've always been on top of the prospect game, but also, Megan, that's always been your thing as well, right? I mean, why can you get into that a little bit for us? Why is it that you have this attraction to the prospects and to the AHL, the fringe players? Because I've seen you in the Avs dressing room, and you love to go talk to the guys that just came up from Loveland and chat a little bit about that stuff with them. So, you know, where does that stem from?
I think it is born from how I was introduced to the sport in the first place. I consider my path to hockey unconventional, and I was in middle school when I discovered hockey, and it was through college hockey. It was an Air Force hockey game. My family was Air Force, so we were just going to Air Force athletic events. We had done football and basketball and finally found ourselves at hockey. And I knew the minute I laid eyes on it that I was done for. This was a sport that just immediately grabbed hold of me. And I think watching it at the collegiate level and watching a program like it's a D1 program, Air Force is, but it's not even necessarily touted as some of the best D1 programs in the world right there in the cadet ice arena. And I liked seeing hockey at that level, though. It feels more tangible to me. And so I started watching more college hockey before I ever set sight on an NHL game. And then being down in Colorado Springs, there were a couple AAA teams. So I watched some AAA hockey. This is where my absolutely weird defense of the Colorado Thunderbirds comes into play, as I believe this is a program that has turned out a lot of pro alumni that it's not getting enough credit for. And it's a joke because it is AAA hockey at the end of the day. And then from there, I started to find community and I was watching a lot of USHL games. I had ties to Nebraska. And so I went out to see a Lincoln Stars game, watched the Omaha Lancers, Tri-City Storm. Like I just started watching a lot of USHL. Obviously, this was around the time that I was looking at colleges. So part of my search for what college I wanted to go to was going to more college games, found myself falling in love with DU and that program. And so from there, I just had this huge history of watching young players. And the other part of it is when I finally got my driver's license, I was able to drive up to training camp in the summers by myself. Like that was sort of the way I got to experience hockey on my own terms. And so I was watching quite literally prospects. This is when they had the Burgundy White game as well. And so I was able to see some of these players that might not be in an NHL game ever in this setting playing live hockey. And I loved it so much. And I would take the camp rosters each year and make little notes about players that I thought showed very well. And I think from all of this together is where this interest in prospects came from.
That's very fascinating. I guess I honestly didn't realize that that was.
Did you go to DU? Is that
the route?
I went to DU. So my first job in hockey was technically DU Athletics. It was a marketing, social media promotion kind of job. So I wasn't really in the thick of it yet, but I just really fell in love with the program even more getting to work there.
Let me ask you something about the DU program. Sorry, Eric.
Go for it.
I've always said that it's such a shame how little attention the DU Pioneers get here in town from a hockey standpoint, primarily, right? I guess you having been within that program and you know, even a fan of it, would you agree? And I guess how do you think us as media and journalists as a whole can try to change that here in town?
Real quick, before you answer that, Megan, I am blown away in these 4 years. The difference in coverage for the Michigan Wolverines and the DU Pioneers. The Wolverines are a storied program, but they haven't won as much as the DU Pioneers in my lifetime. And I am absolutely blown away. Like JJ said, that's a very good point. It's night and day, the difference in coverage.
That's actually such a good point too, because you're right, with the overall total in championships being so close in number, but so much of DU's success being in recent times. It is interesting. I think the coverage has definitely ramped up more than it was before. Like, I was watching DU hockey in a Gwazdecki era, and that was when I noted maybe something of attendance issues. It was still an arena that was drawing fans, but it wasn't even the product on ice or Gwazdecki. I think he was a terrific coach, but something about the Montgomery era, obviously the success that he did eventually find too, obviously brought about better turnout in terms of attendance. And I think it, because I remember I went to the dentist and she was telling me how she is not a hockey fan, but she got season tickets to DU, and this was right after they had won the championship. And so I think it's trending in the right direction, because I think with the Avs winning and DU winning, hockey is generating some buzz in Colorado as a whole. I think this has naturally been building, but I think that also helped to get people interested and college hockey is accessible. But like Eric mentioned, I still don't know if media is where it's at. Like, I know their PR comm person well, and he is always excited to have media come and cover games. I think the difficult part with American League coverage too is a lot of people are covering NHL teams, and so it's just hard to cover multiple teams at once. The other part of it is the money to be made there. Like, there just hasn't been a lot of money put towards the coverage and reporting that comes out of even American League coverage, but also NCAA, at least here in Colorado. Like, I think as this program continues to see success, it's going to be really hard to deny it. But I think geographically they're hindered a little bit, because I just don't know if hockey has taken off quite the way it has in other places like in Minnesota or Michigan, but I'd like to see it. And I think it's building towards that with the state getting more, like they're getting a NAHL team and there's already 3 D1 teams here. I think if the Eagles too, if they see some success under Schneekloff, this is just another avenue for hockey to continue growing in Colorado. But the writing's on the wall. I think that it's happening, but I think why it hasn't happened sooner is money, unfortunately.
Yeah, I could see that. I think there's a really cool connection over the last 20 years with DU hockey, starting from when David and Matt Carl were players here, and obviously David now being the coach. I know a lot about the era of, obviously, because Mike Chambers was a big mentor to me, and he's a big DU guy. There was a lot of connections, like starting from 04-05 or around that time. I think Paul Stastny was on DU as well when they won. David Carl obviously had to transition from player to volunteer coach because he had to retire because of a diagnosis at a very young age. And Gwazdecki put him on the staff as a volunteer or an assistant coach or something of that nature, just like to keep him around. And he ended up getting drafted, I believe, by the Tampa Bay Lightning just as more of a honorary draft pick in the 7th and final round. If you guys remember the Tampa Bay Lightning, they had this weird ownership for a couple years. It was Orrin Kuhls and Len Barry. Len Barry being Tyson Barry's dad, and Orrin Kuhls. And they came in and they bought the team and they promised a whole bunch of things and then ended up selling the team. And that's when Jeff Vinnick came in and bought the team and kind of gave them the stable franchise and ownership that they are now. But Orrin Kuhls was the owner, and his kid played with David Carl in high school. So he went out of his way to draft, kind of similar to what we saw this year, how David Poyle made a trade with Tom Fitzgerald just for the hell of it, to be like, yeah, my first captain, I made a trade, and this is my last trade ever. Orin Cools went out of his way with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I think their GM was Jay Feaster, and they drafted David Carl in the seventh round just as an honorary thing to kind of, you know, thank him for being the guy that he is and you know, going through what he went through at such a young age. David Carl ended up being the assistant to Gwaz. Gwaz ends up moving on to, surprise, the Tampa Bay Lightning as an assistant coach, where he assistant coached the team for a couple seasons, I think, before settling at Valor High School, where he still is now. Carl remained as the assistant coach for Montgomery. Montgomery left. Carl's now the coach. So there's just been, over the last 20 years, this deep connection between all the coaching staffs. We've seen multiple championships. Obviously, I think they went back to back in that Paul Stastny, Matt Carl, David Carl era. And then ended up winning another one here in 2022 when the Avalanche won the Stanley Cup. So I think DU is a wonderful program. I wish it had more coverage. And like you said, it's money around the program. I think there is still an untapped potential of Colorado being a hockey market that we have not hit yet. It has grown immensely. Like, it has grown like crazy. I remember, you know, Mike Chambers' kid played for Gwazdecki at Valor, and that was considered a huge deal. And everybody at the high school talked about this Tampa Bay Lightning assistant coach that used to coach at DU, and like things that kids never used to talk about in Colorado. It wasn't a thing. And, you know, we've seen it grow, but there's still an untapped potential to me. And part of it is that college program and that love for DU hockey, the way that you would have for, you know, what you're seeing now with Prime taking over the CU Boulders football team and you know, the difference that that's made for that program, for example.
I actually met Mike Chambers while I was a student, and he was so kind and generous with his time and did let me do an interview actually to ask about this industry and getting a job in it one day. And I remember he told me about some of his origin story and intro to reporting, and it didn't start with hockey for him. I believe it was racing. And yep. I always valued, though, that he took the time to talk with me. And I love that you pointed out the connections between coaching staff, because even presently, the director of amateur scouting, Wade Klepenstein, for the Avs, is friends and former teammates with Tavis McMillan and Dallas Ferguson at DU assistant. Mm. And they have this close relationship. And I think a lot of the familiarity with Sean Marens, because he was committed to DU from such a young age, stems from that. And so I think that the Sean Marens pipeline to the Avs is explained a little bit through that connection.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think, again, it's something that you should take advantage of. I've made jokes my entire life, and I still do it now. The Red Wings love their Michigan Wolverine players. And why wouldn't you? Like, it's right up the road. It's a great program. Go scout those guys. Go draft those guys. It's why Dylan Larkin's there. It's why they went hard. They wanted Zach Werenski really, really, really hard. They've always had these guys. It's why Andrew Kopp is there. It's why JT Compher is there. They love their Michigan Wolverines. And we always make a joke, oh, here comes the Red Wings drafting or trading or signing for another Wolverines player. But you should do that. The Avalanche should do that with DU. DU is closer to Ball Arena than Ann Arbor's Yost Arena is to the Little Caesars Arena. Like, it's right there. You should take advantage of that program, the connections you have, and use that as your own scouting grounds. And I think the Avalanche should do more of that. Sean Barron's is a big step. Obviously, they kind of fumbled the bag a little bit with Will Butcher. He didn't end up being as good a player as we thought he would be. They did get Paul Stastny from DU. That was a good one, but you should definitely have more guys coming out of there to play for the Avalanche someday.
Or Anttilaksonen.
Anttilaksonen. That's
OG like that. I remember watching Anttilaksonen at DU. I think it was the old building before Magnus was built. But yeah, there's always the connection there. I apologize once again for interrupting our conversation with our awesome guest. Thanks to Megan Angley for joining us today. She's a great conversation and a great person to be around in the press box. But of course, we have to take a pause for the cause, and that's Superbook Sports. We're changing the game. Help your bets stay hot this summer at Superbook Sports, the most trusted name in sports gambling with a direct line to Las Vegas. And now, when you use the promo code MILEHIGH, you score up to $250 with their free first bet bonus. Win or lose, Superbook will match your first bet up to $250 with promo code MILEHIGH. Download the Superbook Sports app, enter the promo code MILEHIGH, and you'll get $250 courtesy of Superbook Sports. Of course, visit superbook.com for terms and conditions. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. 4700. Back to our awesome conversation with Megan. And Megan kind of brought up the Eagles, right? And if the Eagles can really continue to grow their brand up in the north part of the state, obviously it's going to be huge for hockey as a whole. But of course, they just changed coaches, as she mentioned, with Aaron Schneekloth being named the new coach. I always feel like there's a dedication to making the Eagles a good hockey team. I mean, even before they were affiliated with the Avalanche, there was always success there, right? Even back in the ECHL days, that partially due to the good fan base that they've grown there. So where are they going now? Are they still continuing on this, I guess, trajectory of greatness and being competitive and being true contenders? I know they were just in the playoffs, but it seems like there's a little bit of a shakeup from the whole organization kind of top down, not just the Avalanche. So the Eagles kind of seem to have a lot of new faces this year too.
I'm really excited about the changes, and the success, like you mentioned, starts at the ECHL level, and that's actually under the leadership of Schneekloth, which in a second I'll touch on why I'm still excited for the direction the Eagles are headed. But he leads them to 2 back-to-back Kelly Cups. That is then what allows them to jump to that next level and become an American League team. And for each league they've been an AHL team, they've improved their record year by year, advanced a little bit further in the postseason year by year. And that's with now Cronin under the leadership that you're seeing that happen. And Schneekloth also as an assistant, an integral part of that coaching staff alongside Tim Branham as well, who had a lot of influence on their East Coast League success as well, because Branham was a part with the Grizzlies. And now together, last season, the context for it is really important for a lot of reasons. It's important in evaluating the development of prospects generally, because we saw unprecedented amounts of injury plagued the Colorado Avalanche, but this also trickled down and affected the Eagles in a detrimental way. They were able to stay above water for the most part, but they saw 53 different players in an Eagles uniform in the course of a season. Yes. This means players like Jean-Luc Foudy and Oscar Lawson, and now Sampo Ranta, who's no longer with them, were playing alongside a grab bag of players, and that is so inconsistent and not good for their development that I think last year is the year we have to put a little bit of an asterisk by when we're evaluating someone like Oscar Lawson, just for example. But even still, their regular season record ends almost exact, like in terms of standings and wins percentage, as the year before, even in spite of all this. And so I think that they would have had an even better regular season had it not been for all of the injuries. And so as a result, then call-ups also happening. They lose players that were a part of their leadership group in Megna and McDonald. They lost their captains, and they earned a new captain in Brad Hunt, who spent most of his season with the Avs. And so all of this context points to a better future for the Eagles. Now, even with some of the loss of personnel, including head coach Greg Cronin, they have already made some pretty significant offseason moves, bringing in players that I think are going to be so solid to put alongside an Oscar Lawson and to back up, or I even feel it's going to be a starting 1A, 1B tandem kind of thing with Eustace Annunen and the Arvid Holm, the goalie that they got as well. And so I think that we're looking at a much better year ahead for the Eagles, and the success is there for Schneekloth. He has been working with the defensemen a lot in Loveland, and this starts kind of with, I'm going to attribute a little bit of this success to Connor Timmins, Ryan Graves being able to make something of a leap to the next level. Now, obviously, Timmins had a slightly different path forward because of injury, but Ryan Graves became an NHL player. And some of that starts with the work that he was doing in Loveland, largely with Schneekloth. And so I very much feel the Eagles are in good hands under his leadership because of what he's been able to do. I don't even want to say behind the scenes, but it wasn't just Greg Cronin who was a part of some of the success they were seeing and players reinventing their game, young or old. And so with that in mind, I think Schneekloth is very much a teacher, just like Cronin. I'm excited then for what's to come, and also looking forward to the prospect pool, being able to take more of a leap forward, because Oscar Lawson is due for this. I think that last year hurt how the fan base views him as a prospect. And I think that he has a lot more to give, and hopefully with some more consistency with both the Avs and the Eagles, this can be made possible.
I have 2 things to follow up on that from all the information you just gave us. The number 1 is the goalie, Arvid Holm. Tell me more about him, what you know about him. I don't want to put you on the spot if you don't know a lot, but you talked about him being a tandem goalie. This is a behemoth of a guy. I remember looking him up when the Avalanche first got him, 6'5", 200 something pounds, former draft pick of the Winnipeg Jets, I want to say. And obviously has been playing with their AHL team. What did the Avalanche see in this guy? What do you see in this guy? And why do you think that he's going to play a lot of hockey? Because to me, when the Avs let go of Jonas Johansson, obviously Keith Kincaid, and didn't sign that type of player, that veteran goalie, third goalie kind of thing, it says to me that you got George, you got Frankie, and now they're relying on Annan to be the third stringer. But to you, is there a chance, I guess, that Arvid Holm could be that next call-up guy? And what do you know about him?
Well, and Eric, for a couple seasons now, you've been the one saying, like, hey, they're really counting on Annan to take this next step. They're really counting on Annan to take this next step. So when Megan just brought up that now it's going to be more of a 1A, 1B situation, it seems like they might be losing a little faith in Annan there and are bringing somebody to challenge him or push him. You know, either way, they want more out of that situation there.
I think it's kind of insurance because they actually utilized Johansson in a similar way with Justus Onanen. They were splitting starts pretty evenly, but Justus Onanen had the favor. Like, he had the first start of a series, and if there was maybe like a three-game deal, he would get two of the three. And so I still think the faith is there for Justus Onanen, but they're perhaps trying to balance the workload a little bit more evenly and account for the possibility that if Justus Onanen is called up for the Avs, they need somebody who is a starting caliber goaltender in net in Loveland, and that can be Arvid Holm. I think the difference in direction that they're making with Holm versus Johansson or Keith Kincaid is his age. He's a much younger goaltender who I think has a bit more ceiling to realize than some of these other veteran presences. And as a result, I think they kind of view him a little bit like a prospect, as somebody that I actually don't even want to put a cap on what they see his potential to be. But because he's so young, I think that's the difference in direction they're taking. But with all the injuries last year, Justus Onanen got, I don't know how many games he got for the NHL level, but he at least got a couple. And I think this is because they still do believe in him and they wanted to get him in games, despite the circumstances being kind of bad, to see where he's at. All this put together, I actually don't think Justus Onanen had a down or bad year by any stretch of the imagination. And a lot of the struggle, I think, was you look at the volume of shots he faced compared to other goaltenders in the league, because there was a point near the end of the season I looked at the standings and Justus Onanen was still among league-leading goaltenders in terms of save percentage, but you compare then the shots faced for Justus Onanen compared to some of these other goaltenders, and it is so disproportionately high for Justus Onanen because he is just dealing with a lot in net. And so I think some of Arvid Holm is to also address that a little bit too. That's just a lot, a heavy workload. It's going to be shared just a little bit more, and because he's so young, I think he is the guy to get those starts when Justus Onanen is called up. I wouldn't be surprised if they also utilize Holm. I know they were playing with waivers so much with Jonas Johansson, and it was such a risk and such a gamble that maybe they're hoping this is more of a sure thing too for a player to get through waivers. I don't know if he's waiver exempt. Do you know?
I'm not sure. His age is, he was born in 98 or sorry, Justus or Arvid?
Arvid.
Yeah. He was born in 98. So I would assume he's not, but he also doesn't really have NHL experience. So I don't think he has to go through waivers. That's the one rule that always gets me.
Yeah.
I struggle with that one.
If we're right about that, could be a selling point for Arvid Holm getting up and down more easily than Jonas Johansson.
Yeah, I'll have to look more into that one. The question that I have, the follow-up with that is, where is your confidence level in Justus Onanen turning out to be a good NHL goalie? Because when you look at his numbers, you know, the NHL taste that he had, he was 1-0-1 in 2022. We remember that game he came in, I want to say against Ottawa and finished it, or Philadelphia, and then played Ottawa as a starter. And then there was this year, he obviously also had two games, was also in the 850 something save percentage. Obviously the Avalanche this year, like you said, it's an asterisk with some of these games. But when you look at his AHL numbers in 2022, he wasn't all that well, but in 2023, he did take a pretty good step. Like, he was 22, 10 and 8. He played 41 games, so exactly half the season. He had a 916 save percentage, so he was pretty good there. So I guess, what is your confidence in him taking that next step? Just looking at other goalies like Joseph Woll for the Toronto Maple Leafs, he was 6-1 in 7 NHL games with like a 930. He played in the playoffs and was a 915. So do you think Eustace has what it takes this year to make that impression in the NHL?
And I still sort of pencil Eustace in a third string role at the moment, but I do think he could fulfill that in the near future. He went head to head with Dustin Wolf in the Stockton Heat series last year, and yep, it was a goaltender battle, and they both did extremely well. I think a lot of that too, like Eustace Annunen's postseason play that year specifically was so strong. He was a bright spot, and I think the reason they saw the success that they did, it was just really hard to beat that Stockton Heat team that year. And a lot of it was that was his first year getting acclimated to North American ice, and there was a goaltending coach change, Ryan Bach to Peter Budaj. And he's now had a full season under Peter Budaj. He spent most of that season as well with Peter Budaj because it happened around January. But this last year, when you pointed out that the numbers were actually a pretty good step forward, I think that's him growing more comfortable, a little more confident, working with the same goalie coach throughout the year. And that's why my confidence is still high for Eustace Annunen.
Okay, awesome. Now, my second follow-up, the second thing I want to talk about, did you have anything else about the goalies, JJ?
I was just thinking, I hope we don't have to see them, because I personally love the current Avalanche goalie tandem so much, and I see so much potential in what Pavel Francouz can do as a backup guy that I want to see him play the whole season. So that's all that's been running through my mind is just, man, I need to see these two goalies be healthy this year and not see much of Eustace Annunen, because I want Pavel Francouz's future in Colorado to continue.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's a fine line between what the Avalanche had last season, or, you know, the last 3 years, I would say, with their goaltending, even the year they won the cup, where one of their two main goalies are out 4 to 6 weeks, 6 to 8 weeks, a month, for Frankie's case, an entire season in 2021. There's a fine line between that and, you know, Frankie needs 3 games off, so Annunen will back up, or Georgie needs 3 games off. Like, those are fine, those little stretches, but I'm just hoping that when you do have those, if the Avalanche are playing 5 games in 9 nights, let's say it's a homestand, and not that they have this on their schedule, but it's 5 games in 9 nights, every single one at home, and, you know, Georgie suffers an injury that's going to take 7 to 10 days to heal up, you want to have the confidence to not have to play Frankie 5 games in a row. You want to be able to say Annunen could step up. He could take on the Winnipeg Jets. He could take on the Nashville Predators, and he's going to give you a 920 and 930. So
is it so crazy to just ask for no injuries at all? Is it really that insane?
With this team? Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, that's the funny thing about this team is, you know, we're doing it again, and I'm seeing it again on Twitter. Everybody is tweeting their depth charts. Here's what the Avs first line and the second line and the third line is going to look like. Here's what the defense is going to look like. And I'm going to be like, guys, by October 20, there might be 2-3 guys out of the lineup. I don't think it's going to be to the level of last season, but you got to take that into account. And that's why it's so important to have that defense, or that goaltending depth. Well, even the defensive depth, but that's why it's important to have that goaltending depth, and why we're even talking about guys like Annunen and Arvid Holm is because you're going to need those guys to step up. So very good point there on Frankie and Georgie, but I do think that you're going to hope that in the 3, 4, 5 games that Annunen might need to play, he's not an 850 goalie. So that's kind of where I'm at with him. Now, let me go from there to the second follow-up I had on your prospect pool is Jean-Luc Foudy. Where are you in his development in being kind of the forward version of Eustace Annunen, where he can come in and be effective rather than another guy that Jared Bednar plays for 4 minutes and for 9 games and then sends him down?
You know, I'm encouraged by the amount of leash or runway that was given to young players called up last year. Not only that, but as many that were called up last year. Like, Foudy getting in 9 NHL games feels like sort of a turning point then for my guess at what his utilization could be in another call-up, which I think he's earned. I think that he showed well enough. There's still some parts of his game that I think they'd like to see him not only solidify, but do so consistently. And those are the kind of blue collar things that a depth player does, which isn't really his role with the Eagles, but it is something that he's been working on in recognizing his path to the NHL isn't going to be a top 6 wing. It's going to be doing the necessary things that a third or fourth line player would do. And this is something they've been working on with him that I think he's prepared to then be effective in games next season. The only thing I will say is he missed a fair amount of time at the end of this season and is, you know, as recently as development camp, still rehabilitating an injury. And I think it was one of those that was kind of, it came up, it lingered, he played through it a little bit, it didn't quite get better because he was still playing, and so he just needed this full length of time to get healthy. With that in mind, then, I'm a little unsure with some of that time missed, because it's valuable time that he would be getting those reps in to become a more consistent player that Jared Bednar could trust, that he kind of missed out on, that I feel bad about. I still think he's going to get the chance. I still think he's going to be effective, because the one thing that he can do well that can't necessarily be taught or just changed in a player's game is matching the pace at which the Avs play. And the speed is something that he already does so well. So the other intangibles in the game, you know, the way he can engage in contact, and also there's a little bit of discipline at the next level that he needed to fine tune. I think he was just overreaching with his stick at points. These are things that can be worked on. And that's why I have confidence that he would still be effective in a call-up position. He's still one of the prospects that I am highest on. Another that would be such a win for the development department because of this player falling to the third round and potentially being an NHL player. I think it's really exciting. And each year, Foodie has gotten better. And the jump he took the year before last, started around March, carried into the playoffs, was such a big leap. Seeing that kind of transformation in such a short amount of time is why I continue to be high on Jean-Luc Foodie.
The one thing that I'll always remember about Jean-Luc Foodie, obviously, in hindsight, it wasn't the best prediction, and not to bash the guy by any means, but JJ and I in 2020, we had a prospect guy on named Tony Ferrari, who wasn't super high on Justin Barron, just coming off of the blood clot season, which makes sense as to why. And when the Avalanche took Jean-Luc Foodie in the third round, he said, this makes up for what I feel wasn't the best pick in the first round, is getting this kid in the third round. So I always think of that as the Avalanche got a good one, and I've been waiting for 3 years to see what he could be. And obviously that's why we ask you these questions. It's the same thing why we ask about Justus Ennen. Is, you know, I see his numbers in the NHL, and obviously the opportunity isn't what it should be at this point. But you're the one that sees these players pretty much every single night in Loveland. You're the one that's tracking them. I don't pretend that I watch AHL games. I don't pretend I've watched Kovalenko games as much as researched about him and then researched highlights when I started to learn more about him. But obviously in the AHL level, that's why we ask you. So I'm excited for Jean-Luc Foodie. I'm excited to see what he can bring.
He was one of the best skaters in that draft year. And I think that's why your prospect guy was surprised to see him fall to the third round. And that's what gives me excitement about him, because it continues to be the strength in his game. He is such an effective skater, open ice, in traffic. He's so fast and so agile. It is such a compliment to the way the Avs like to play too. And then the parts of his game that he's been working on has been some of the playmaking. Like, he used to defer a little bit too much, but he's been trying to balance distributing the puck as well as just taking shots. And it's something that you see that on paper is translating a little bit too. Like, he is finding more offense in his game, but he's also working on the little details, and I appreciate that he's putting in that work too.
Everybody out there is going to be listening to this podcast and not watching it, but I have a video shot here of Megan, and every time a prospect's name is brought up, she smiles. Just, it's a natural reaction from her. So I love how into the prospect pool you are, but of course you cover the Avalanche as well. You're in that press box with us. Just a quick question about the current Avalanche team and the moves they've made this offseason. Do you feel like there's, I guess, an added element of excitement for this season for Avalanche fans and media alike, just especially against last year and kind of the weird season that was? I feel like there's a little bit more, I guess excitement's the only word I can think of around this upcoming season.
Absolutely. I look critically at anyone who is not feeling excited about the upcoming season, because it can only go up from here, it feels like. I almost don't want to say that aloud, but the number of injuries last year was such a challenge, and I don't foresee it reaching that level of bad again this year. And then the other thing is, the core is still intact in so many ways. It's not actually such a far cry from the 2022 team. This is still a team with Cale Makar and Mikko Rantanen and Nathan MacKinnon. I always get excited about that year by year. The other part, and you kind of touched on this earlier, but I do feel that they got things really correct in net. And I am so excited for the future of this team when they are a little bit healthier and what we can see from Alexander Georgiev in net, because I think he was such a bright spot in an otherwise difficult year. And this is such a cost-effective contract that he's on, and he's going to be an AV for a little bit now. And so we get to see the rest of that with Alexander Georgiev and a hopefully healthier lineup in front of him. And then the other part is some of these new faces. And, you know, in seeing how heavily the Avs targeted some of them and also recognizing the amount of money they're investing in their third line, it invites a little bit of concern, but it also invites excitement that they are seeing something and the amount of money that they're putting towards Miles Wood and Ross Colton to get a little excited by. And then the other part of it is the opportunity for a player like a Ben Myers, who had, I think, an unconventionally bad season. Yeah. Like, I think he played better than the lack of goal scoring indicates. And I think that there is so much more for him to give. There's a reason he was a highly sought after free agent. And there's a reason he chose Colorado in the end. And I'd like to see someone like that, especially, take a step forward. And I'm really counting on a lot more health. It doesn't have to be perfect, but that by itself is a reason to get excited.
Yeah, I think Ben Myers, like you said, it can only go up from here for the season. That describes Ben Myers in a nutshell. The big thing for me for this season, look, we can look at the added depth, and it is a huge part of this team and how much that's going to help. It's unfortunate Landeskog won't play, but he didn't play last season either. And we're comparing this to last season in terms of the Avalanche stepping forward. But the defense is the big one to me. I've been saying this for 12 months now. The Avalanche are a team built with defense first, and that's not a crack at McKinnon, Rantanen, and any of the forwards. That's just a lot of praise for how good their blue line is. Kale McCarr missed one quarter of the season and was playing injured when he was playing, and still ended up a Norris Trophy finalist. And you could argue that Kale McCarr, for his level, had a down year. Bowen Byram missed half a season. Josh Manson missed two-thirds of a season. You just get a healthy Kale McCarr being Kale McCarr, who in his, quote, down year was a Norris Trophy finalist. You get a healthy season out of him. You get your first healthy season out of Bowen Byram, and you get even 60 games out of Josh Manson. Just that upgrade alone is going to elevate this team. And that doesn't even account for Johansson and Colton and Wood and Drouin. That doesn't even account for McKinnon and Rantanen coming off the seasons they came off of. That doesn't account for Kovalenko possibly jumping into the lineup. Ben Myers making that next step. Georgiev following up the season he had. Frankie being healthy. Like, there are so many parts to this team to be excited for. To me, it's that blue line.
I just think that, you know, with guys like McKinnon and Rantanen, and McKinnon especially, there's going to be this reinvigoration because of the front office's ability to invest in the team. And he knows that they're investing in him and trying to win now. And I think, you know, he's the ultimate guy to chalk last year up as a loss and just start fresh. I think we're going to see continued heights of Nathan McKinnon. I know it's hard to continue to raise the bar for that guy, but I think he's going to continue to grow, and we're going to see a lot of pep in his step early on in the season. But
yeah, and real quick, we could do an episode on this for a full hour, but just the McKinnon-Drouin thing to me is just so fascinating that McKinnon would go out on a limb for somebody like that. There's just so many parts of this team to be excited for.
Right on, Megan. Closing thoughts, I guess. It's been a whole hour already. Of course, thanks for joining us today. But anything else you want to get off your chest before we head out of here for the week?
No, I can't wait to lower your seats in the press box this upcoming season.
It was you behind it the entire time.
No,
okay.
Everyone did it, you know, at different times. So you'll never know where it's coming from.
I believe you.
It all started when I lowered Jesse's chair.
It's a chain reaction.
It took off from there.
Which for me and my Waluigi looking legs, it's a lot more different when you do it to me than Jesse. I'll just say that. So
I'm
keeping my eyes on.
I don't even know what that
you.
Means, but I'm going to Google
you
it.
You don't know who Waluigi is?
I know who it is, but I don't know what his legs look like or what that reference means. So
damn it, JJ, you're not a Nintendo guy. Close the show. Let's end it.
All right. Thanks again, Megan, for hanging out with us. It's been awesome. And
thank you. Yeah.
Continuing here on the Press Box Tour 2023. So, of course, check out Superbook Sports. Yeah. Anything else, Arif? Megan? We're done?
That's it. That's it from me. This is all I can give you on July 23rd of an offseason.
Right on. Well, if you made it this far on the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone. We at you.